Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive?
Always. What fascinating corner of history are we exploring today?
Well, this time we're going way back to 14th century Africa, to the Mali Empire.
Ah, Mali, the land of gold and legendary rulers.
Exactly. We're diving deep into the life and legacy of Mansa Musa, one of the most powerful and influential rulers in African history.
Now, that's a name that sparks curiosity.
Right. And to get to the bottom of his story, we've got all sorts of sources. Encyclopedias, academic articles, historical accounts, trying to figure out how he created this golden age for Mali and how that impacted West Africa, even how the world viewed Africa for centuries.
It's amazing how one person's story can shift our entire perspective on history, isn't it?
Absolutely. Okay, so let's start with the basics. Mansa Musa ruled the Mali Empire, get this, from around 1312 to 1337.
Wow, that's quite a reign. And the title Mansa itself, it means emperor or sultan. So we're not talking about a minor local leader here.
Not at all. This was a powerful ruler commanding a vast empire. And he wasn't just known as Mansa Musa. He had other names too, depending on the language and context. Kanku Musa, Mali Koi, shows you the diversity of cultures within the Mali Empire.
A true melting pot. Okay, so how did the guy rise to power? What's the backstory?
The story of his rise to power is actually pretty intriguing. It all starts with his predecessor, who might have been named Mohammed Idunkwa, deciding to explore the Atlantic Ocean.
Explore the Atlantic. Wow, that's ambitious, especially for that time period.
Right, and not just once. He went twice. The first voyage had something like 200 ships, and the second one, are you ready for this, supposedly had 2,000 ships.
2,000 ships. That's mind-boggling. What a testament to the maritime capabilities of the Mali Empire. We rarely hear about these sorts of things in our history books.
I know, it's incredible. And so while this predecessor of his is out there sailing the open seas, Musa's left in charge, basically running things back home. And then guess what? The Mansa never returns.
Wow, so Musa steps up to the plate.
Exactly. Talk about being in the right place at the right time. He takes over and boom, the Mali Empire explodes in wealth and power.
Hold on, hold on. It might not be as straightforward as that. Some historians think Musa's rise to power might have been, let's just say, a bit more calculated.
Ooh, interesting. You think there might be some palace intrigue going on?
Well, there are alternative interpretations, let's put it that way. Could Musa have had a role in his predecessor's disappearance? It's a historical mystery we might never solve.
A little bit of mystery always makes history more exciting, right? But regardless of how he got there, Mansa Musa's reign marked the beginning of a truly remarkable period for the Mali Empire.
We're talking about a period of unprecedented wealth, territorial expansion, and cultural flourishing. This is when the Mali Empire really stepped onto the world stage.
Okay, so paint us a picture. How big was this empire? What made them so wealthy?
Well, under Mansa Musa, the Mali Empire stretched over 2,000 miles across West Africa. Think about that, 2,000 miles. That's larger than most European kingdoms at the time.
Wow, from what to what? Like geographically, give me a sense of the scale.
Okay, so they controlled territory from parts of modern-day Mauritania and Senegal in the west, all the way east to Chad. We're talking Gambia, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Mali itself, of course, Niger, Nigeria, a massive chunk of West Africa.
That is massive. But what fueled this incredible expansion? It must have taken a lot of resources to manage an empire that size.
Resources they had. Gold, for one, the Mali Empire had these rich gold mines, especially down south.
Okay, so they had the bling, but there's got to be more to it than just gold, right?
Right. They also controlled the trans-Saharan trade routes, and those were the economic lifelines of the region, like the superhighways of their day.
Connecting North Africa and Europe to the rest of Africa.
Exactly. Control those routes, and you control the flow of goods and the wealth that comes with it.
Makes sense. So it was a combination of strategic location and abundant resources that made them so powerful.
Exactly. But it wasn't just gold they were trading. They also had salt, ivory, unfortunately, slaves as well, spices, silks, ceramics, you name it, they traded it. It was a bustling hub of economic activity.
So they were in the perfect spot geographically, had tons of resources, and were really smart about trading those resources, a recipe for success in any era.
And all this, mind you, while Europe was still stuck in the Middle Ages, it really challenges those traditional narratives we have about global power and progress.
It's amazing to think about what was happening in different parts of the world simultaneously. So this gold, this trade, this power, it all kind of culminates in Mansa Musa's legendary pilgrimage to Mecca, right?
Ah, yes, the pilgrimage. This wasn't just a casual trip. It was an epic spectacle, a grand display of wealth and power that became legendary.
Yeah, we've all seen those images of Mansa Musa holding a golden scepter, right?
Precisely. Tens of thousands of people traveled with him, soldiers, courtiers,
A whole entourage.
A whole entourage indeed. And then there were the camels.
You camel.
Oh, yes, 80 camels, each laden with 300 pounds of gold dust. Imagine the logistics of moving that much wealth across the Sahara Desert.
That's insane. I can't even fathom the amount of gold we're talking about here. And I bet he wasn't exactly shy about spending it either.
Oh, not at all. He was incredibly generous, showered the poor with gold, gave extravagant gifts to rulers along the way, even built mosques in the cities he visited.
Talk about making an impression.
He did. In fact, he gave away so much gold in Cairo that he actually caused inflation. The value of gold plummeted because there was just so much of it suddenly flooding the market.
Wow, he single-handedly messed with the Cairo economy. Now that's power.
It's a testament to the sheer amount of wealth flowing from Mali. This pilgrimage was a strategic display of power and influence on a global scale.
It also seems like he did a bit more than just make a religious pilgrimage. Didn't he add some new territory to the empire during that trip?
Yes. While he was on his way to Mecca, his general went and conquered the city of Gao, a strategic victory that further expanded the Mali Empire.
So he's on his way to Mecca, his army's out there conquering cities. This guy was unstoppable.
It seems so, and he was clearly pleased with the conquest of Gao. On his return journey, he actually made a detour to visit the newly conquered city.
Smart move. Got to consolidate those gains, right?
Exactly. Mansa Musa was a shrewd ruler, always looking for ways to strengthen his empire. He knew how to use his power strategically, both through military might and through grand gestures like his pilgrimage.
And speaking of grand gestures, his pilgrimage to Mecca didn't just impress the people he met along the way. It actually put Mali on the map. Literally. European maps started featuring Mali, directly inspired by Mansa Musa's journey.
It's amazing how one journey can have such a lasting impact, shaping global perceptions for centuries to come. Mansa Musa's pilgrimage wasn't just about personal faith. It was a strategic move that shifted how the world saw Africa.
So we've got a ruler who's expanding his empire, controlling trade routes, and basically showcasing his wealth and power to the world. But there's another side to Mansa Musa, isn't there? A side that's often overlooked in the stories of his conquests and riches.
Absolutely. Mansa Musa wasn't just a conqueror and empire builder. He was also a great patron of education, art, and architecture.
That's right. This is where we see the real legacy of Mansa Musa, the creation of a golden age for Mali that went beyond just material wealth.
He was a visionary leader who understood that true prosperity comes not just from gold and military strength, but from knowledge, culture, and a thriving intellectual life.
And that's where Timbuktu comes in, right?
Exactly.
This legendary city in the middle of the Sahara Desert that became a center of learning and scholarship under Mansa Musa's rule.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? Timbuktu, this bustling hub of intellectual activity, attracting scholars from all over the Islamic world, right there in the heart of the desert.
I know. And it was Mansa Musa who helped make that happen. He brought back scholars and architects from Mecca, people with the knowledge and skills to turn Timbuktu into something truly special.
And they did. Timbuktu became renowned for its mosques, its libraries, and its universities. It was a place where people came to study astronomy, law, theology, history, mathematics, a true center of learning that rivaled anything in Europe at the time.
And those buildings, the Djingareber Mosque, for example, it's an architectural masterpiece. And the story behind its construction is just as fascinating.
Oh, tell me about it. Mansa Musa reportedly paid the architect 200 kilograms of gold to design and build that mosque.
200 kilograms of gold.
Can you imagine? That's a testament to how much importance he placed on architecture, on creating beautiful and inspiring spaces.
And it wasn't just about aesthetics. He was building a legacy, a foundation for knowledge and scholarship that he hoped would last for generations.
And it did for a time. Timbuktu, at its height, had something like 25,000 students, can you believe it? And a library with over 800,000 manuscripts.
800,000 manuscripts.
A treasure trove of knowledge that we're still rediscovering and learning from today.
That's incredible. So we've got a ruler who's not just conquering and amassing wealth. He's investing in education, in art, in architecture. He's building something that transcends his own lifetime.
Exactly. He's creating a legacy that will inspire and educate people for centuries to come.
And that's something worth remembering, isn't it? That true leadership isn't just about power and wealth. It's about creating something that lasts, something that benefits future generations.
Absolutely. And Mansa Musa, in that sense, was a true visionary. But sadly, as with all empires, decline inevitably sets in even under the most visionary leaders.
So what happened? Did everything just fall apart after Mansa Musa?
It's rarely that simple. The seeds of decline are often planted long before the actual collapse. And in the case of the Mali Empire, there were a number of factors that contributed to its eventual downfall.
Like what? Give us a sneak peek. What were some of the challenges that led to the decline of this once mighty empire?
Well, one of the biggest challenges was succession. After Mansa Musa's death, his successors struggled to maintain control over such a vast and diverse territory. Internal conflicts and power struggles weakened the empire from within.
It sounds like the empire was stretched too thin, making it vulnerable to both internal and external threats.
Precisely. And external threats there were. Competing trade centers emerged, challenging Mali's dominance, and sensing weakness, external enemies started to chip away at the empire's borders.
So it wasn't just one thing that brought down the Mali Empire, but a combination of factors, internal divisions, external pressures, and the challenges of maintaining such a vast and complex empire.
Exactly. And it serves as a reminder that even the most powerful empires are not immune to the forces of history. Maintaining power and stability requires constant vigilance, adaptability, and a bit of luck, too.
That's a sobering thought. But even though the Mali Empire eventually declined, Mansa Musa's legacy continues to resonate, right?
Absolutely. His impact on West African societies, on our understanding of African history, and on global perceptions of Africa is undeniable.
So much more than just mountains of gold and grand pilgrimages.
Indeed. Mansa Musa's story is a testament to the power of leadership, vision, and the enduring impact of cultural exchange. Welcome back, everyone. Ready to delve deeper into the world of Mansa Musa?
Absolutely. We just scratched the surface in part one. There's still so much to uncover.
That's the beauty of these deep dives, isn't it? You start peeling back the layers and you realize how much there is to discover.
Speaking of uncovering, we ended part one talking about the decline of the Mali Empire. It's kind of a bittersweet note to end on, you know, this incredible empire that flourished under Mansa Musa eventually fading away.
Yeah, it is. But the decline of any empire, it really offers valuable insights into the nature of power, the challenges of succession, the unpredictability of history.
True. It's a reminder that nothing lasts forever, even the most powerful empires. So let's zoom out a bit. Big picture now. What are the key takeaways from Mansa Musa's reign? Why should his story matter to us today?
Well, for me, one of the most striking things is how interconnected the world already was back then. We tend to think of globalization as a modern phenomenon, but Mansa Musa's story shows us that cultural exchange and global networks have been around for centuries.
Yeah, we talked about Timbuktu giving this major center of learning, scholars coming from all over the Islamic world.
Right, but it wasn't just a one-way street. Scholars from Mali were traveling, too, to other Islamic regions, sharing their knowledge and perspectives. It was a dynamic exchange, a network of learning and collaboration that went beyond trade and conquest.
So alongside the gold and salt, there's this whole flow of ideas and beliefs and artistic expressions happening too.
Exactly. And it wasn't limited to the Islamic world either. Think about the impact of Mansa Musa's pilgrimage to Mecca.
Oh yeah, that was a major event.
It wasn't just a personal religious journey, it was a strategic move. He was essentially announcing Mali's presence on the world stage.
Projecting an image of power and wealth.
And it worked. For centuries afterward, European maps featured Mali, often even mentioning Mansa Musa by name.
He put Mali on the map, both figuratively and literally.
He did. It really highlights the power of strategic communication. Even back then, Mansa Musa understood how to create a narrative, how to make a statement that would resonate globally.
It's a good reminder that controlling the narrative, shaping perceptions, it's always been an important part of leadership. Okay, so we've got this global impact, this projection of power and influence. But what about Mansa Musa's leadership within the Mali Empire itself? What kind of ruler was he beyond the conquests and the gold?
Well, he was clearly a visionary. He understood the importance of investing in education, infrastructure, the arts. Look at Timbuktu. It wasn't a major city before him. He turned it into this thriving intellectual capital.
Yeah, he wasn't just interested in amassing wealth and power for himself. He was laying the foundation for a prosperous and enlightened society.
He was thinking long-term about the legacy he would leave behind. And that kind of forward-thinking leadership, it's just as relevant today as it was in the 14th century.
Absolutely. Now, Mansa Musa was also a devout Muslim, right? His pilgrimage to Mecca, the mosques he built, the scholars he supported it, all points to a strong commitment to his faith.
Definitely. His embrace of Islam had a profound impact on the Mali Empire, both culturally and politically. It opened up new trade routes, forged diplomatic ties with other Muslim states.
And within Mali, Islam became a unifying force, creating a shared identity and set of values across the diverse groups within the empire.
It's important to note, though, that Mansa Musa didn't force conversions or impose Islam on his subjects. He encouraged its adoption through education and cultural exchange.
More about integration than coercion.
Exactly. He understood that true lasting change, it comes from within, not from force. Another valuable lesson for leaders today, especially in our increasingly diverse and interconnected world.
So much to unpack here. It's easy to get lost in the dates and battles when we study history. But when we look closer like we're doing now, history becomes so much more than just facts and figures.
It's about the choices people made, the values they held, and the impact those choices had on the world around them. Mansa Musa's story, it's not just ancient history. It's a story about ambition, about leadership, faith, the rise and fall of empires, themes that resonate across time and place.
Themes that we're still grappling with today. What makes a great leader? How do we build a more just and equitable society? How do we balance tradition and progress?
Mansa Musa's story doesn't give us all the answers, but it offers a fascinating case study, a chance to reflect on those big questions.
It reminds us that history is full of surprises, that there are always new perspectives to discover, if we're willing to look, and that we can learn so much from those who came before us.
Exactly. So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I'd encourage everyone to keep exploring, keep asking questions, and stay open to the lessons that history can teach us.
Welcome back to the deep dive. We've been on quite a journey with Mansa Musa, haven't we?
We have. From the rise of the Mali Empire to its eventual decline, his story has so many layers.
It really does. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I think it's worth reflecting on what we can take away from all of this. What are the lessons from Mansa Musa's story that we can apply to our own lives, our own world today?
You know, one of the biggest things that stands out to me is how important it is to challenge those historical narratives that we often take for granted, like the idea that Europe was always the center of everything. Mansa Musa's story really disrupts that Eurocentric view, doesn't it?
It sure does. It shows us that there were these powerful, wealthy, sophisticated empires thriving in Africa centuries ago.
Exactly. And it reminds us that there are so many different stories out there, so many perspectives that we need to hear.
Especially as we try to build a more just and equitable world, right? We need to decolonize our thinking, to recognize the contributions of all cultures, and acknowledge how interconnected our history truly is.
Absolutely. We need to move beyond those simplistic, often biased narratives and embrace a more nuanced understanding of the past.
Now, what about Mansa Musa as a leader? What lessons can we learn from him on that front?
Well, he was clearly a brilliant strategist, both militarily and politically, but he was also a visionary leader who invested in education, infrastructure, the arts. He didn't just want to amass wealth and power, he wanted to create a thriving society that would benefit future generations.
Like with Timbuktu, right?
Exactly. He saw the potential of that city and turned it into this incredible center of learning, attracting scholars from all over the world.
And he wasn't just about conquest and expansion. He also had this deep respect for culture and tradition. He embraced Islam, but he didn't force it on his people.
That's a really important point. He understood that true lasting change comes from within, not through coercion. It's about finding that balance between ambition, strength, and respect for the cultures and traditions that make up a society.
Such a valuable lesson, especially in today's world, which often feels so polarized and divided.
Couldn't agree more. We need leaders who can bring people together, who can bridge divides and build consensus. And I think Mansa Musa's story offers some valuable insights into how that might be done.
Another thing that really struck me was the power of cultural exchange. We talked about how Mansa Musa's pilgrimage to Mecca wasn't just a personal religious journey, it was also a strategic move to put Mali on the world stage.
And it had this ripple effect, sparking all sorts of exchanges between Mali and the rest of the Islamic world, ideas, knowledge, artistic expressions flying back and forth.
It just shows how connected the world already was back then and how much we can all learn from each other.
Absolutely. Appreciating different cultures, learning from different perspectives, it's not just a nice thing to do, it's essential for building a more peaceful, just, and prosperous world.
And finally, I think Mansa Musa's story is ultimately a story of hope, a reminder that even in the face of challenges and setbacks, we can achieve incredible things.
The Mali Empire may not have lasted forever, but it left behind a legacy that continues to inspire us today.
It's a testament to the ingenuity, the resilience, the creativity of African civilizations. And it's a story that can motivate us to build a better future. A world where collaboration, innovation, and shared prosperity are the norm.
So to everyone listening, keep exploring, keep learning, keep challenging those old narratives.
There's so much out there to discover, so many stories waiting to be told. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the life and legacy of Mansa Musa. We hope you enjoyed it.